Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Go to ring.com/know-how and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Today on Know-How,
we're starting the year off right by flying some quadcopters. It's Quadcopter 101.
Welcome to Know-How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, and give a quadcopter CPR, I guess.
Yes. That's what we're doing. Claire. No, am I doing this right, Padre?
Oh, yeah.
I've never flown a quadcopter before.
A couple compressions. You know, it's good. Check airway first, though. Now, folks, this is a New Year's edition of Know-How. I am Father Robert Ballester, and sitting next to me...
I'm Jason Howell.
Yeah, how about that? Oh, folks, it's been a while. Believe it or not, it's been more than 3 years since we started doing quadcopters here on Know-How. And we finally started getting enough people in the Google Plus group and in our emails saying, hey, you know, I'd like to find the notes for that old build. And the thing about doing an old build from old parts is sometimes there's better things out there. And sometimes the knowledge has evolved a little bit. So we thought we'd bring back quadcopters for some Quadcopters 101. Now we're going to start with the most basic builds. And then we're going to get into something a bit more advanced. We're going to do this over the next couple of months just so that you can go out and fly some cool stuff. Now, Jason... You don't have a long history flying multirotors.
I can probably write out the history of flying these things on the palm of my hand with a couple of letters, actually.
Yeah.
I have no history, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Other than occasionally, very randomly here in the studio, because, you know, we have lots of fun toys, and some of those toys have included in the past the quadcopters and the little ones and the big ones and everything. But the few times that I picked up a controller and tried to fly it, I was so bad it scared me from doing it again. And so I just haven't.
And we want to remedy that.
All right.
We want to make you a comfortable pilot, someone who is good with your skills, who understands how quadcopters work, because that will ultimately make you a better quadcopter innovator. And that's what we want here at Know-How. Now, here's the thing. You could go out right now and you could buy a relatively competent multi-rotor craft. And you could probably do it for less than what the parts are going to cost us for this. Mm-hmm. But, and we've explained this before on the show, we're not about that. We're about actually teaching you how these devices work. Because if you know how they work, it means that you can build them, you can design them, you can fix them, you can upgrade them, you can make them better. And Jason, what we don't want is we don't want a disposable culture where you buy a quadcopter and you kind of break it and then you throw it away and you buy a new one.
Right.
We want you to be able to design and fix your own gear. That's what we're going to be doing on this episode.
And this that we have out on the table right here is a prime example of that, right? Like, how long have we had this exact unit in the TWiT studios, you know, prior to this, the brick house?
It's
been upgraded and revised over the years.
Oh, yes. You could say that. This is actually the original DJI Phantom that we bought for TWiT, or Leo bought for TWiT way back when these were first starting to come out. It was crazy expensive, and unfortunately, over the years, it hasn't been treated well. Between a few engineers who were learning on these things.
Right.
And we learned many things. Like, for example, they do not fly upside down.
Okay.
They do not like flying into
walls.
Did
anyone actually try to fly them upside down?
Yes.
Okay.
my personal favorite is if they're stuck in the tree, just ramping the throttle doesn't make them unstuck from the tree.
Oh, okay.
We burned out every motor. We burned out every speed controller. We burned out all the electronics. So basically, the only thing that's original on this DJI is the shell.
Is the base of it, the body, right in the middle.
Just the body. Everything else has been replaced. But it's a very good place to start, because this was really the start of the non-toy quadcopter. There had been multi-rotors in the past, but they were all toys. I mean, they were really toys. This was the first one where you could do something useful. Specifically, you could strap a GoPro onto the bottom of this thing and take aerial photography. And that opened up the sport, the hobby to a lot more people. They, mm-hmm. they suddenly saw something that was a toy, and they said, oh, wow, that'd be really cool for a shot.
Yeah, it's a good utility. I have to imagine, has the shock absorption improved over the years? Like, is this an old mounting mechanism?
No, that is actually, if you focus in on this, that's actually something, if you go to the overhead, that's something that I had to create.
Okay.
Because the original mounting that came with this was basically just a stick of plastic that glued onto the bottom.
And this at least helps to stabilize it a little bit more.
Right.
Well, I get, okay, so stretching that question out, quadcopters and, you know, drones and all this stuff has really exploded over the last couple of years. This is old. In comparison with what we have now, but I mean, it's still 3-4 years or whatever has been the real kind of the arc of expansion in this space. What do we take for granted now? Like, what is so commonplace now that didn't exist 4 years ago that really makes them so much better now?
Good question, because actually nothing. Serious.
Good.
If you take this, which is built on 4-year-old technology, and you compare it to the new one, which is much nicer and does many more things, the basic components are the same. The motors are the same. The ESCs are the same. The only thing that they've really changed is maybe the design, the aerodynamic design of the craft, and the flight controller. So the brains have changed. But even within that, all the major components are the same. You're still going to use an IMU to figure out where you're accelerating. You're still going to use some sort of circuitry that can tell you if you're tilted one way or another. So it's evolved, but it hasn't evolved to eliminate all the old ones. Mm-hmm. This will still fly like one of the new ones. In fact, it's better to learn on this because I always tell people when I'm teaching them, you want all of the electronics, all the smarts, off.
Yeah, because I mean, you can get these things so smart now where you hardly have to do anything, right? It's almost like you can pre-program a flight path and it just does it for you, or
precisely.
It just follows you.
Precisely. I'll be at CES next week, and I've already got a dozen invitations from companies who want to show me their new drones, and I've watched the videos, and most of them are, well, there's a button to take off and there's a button to land. It's like, okay, and that's cool. I like that. That's fantastic, but the problem with that is when the electronics fail, not if they fail, but when they fail, you still have to know how to pilot your craft safely. You have to be able to bring it back without dropping it on a crowd or dropping it into the ocean. And so if you learn with all the smarts on, you don't really get a sense of how it's actually working. And that's what we want to do.
False sense of security.
Yeah. So let's start from the beginning. When we think of aircraft, most of us have flown on planes, passenger airliners. And what they use is they use the engines for thrust, for forward thrust. They pull the plane, the aircraft, through the air, and then you've got an aerodynamic effect on all of the surface, the control surface. So that's the wings, that's the tail. That allows me to direct my craft. So if I'm level like this and I want my plane to bank, I can push the elevator down on here and maybe pull it up on here, and what will happen is I'll do that. I want to go the other way. I reverse the effect, and I'll do that. Same thing with the tail. If I deflect the rudder this way, it will push the plane that way. Well, the thing about a quadcopter is, Jason, if you look at this, there are no control surfaces.
Yeah.
There's no wing. There's no rudder. There's no tail. In fact, this is not even like a helicopter, because in a helicopter, I would have one or two main rotors, and then I would have some sort of sideways-mounted rotor to counteract the torque forces. Because remember, if I'm spinning something in this direction, the body wants to spin in the other direction. This is basic Newton's law. You know, any action has an opposite and equal reaction. So in a helicopter, I'd have one prop spinning this way, and then I'd have a tail rotor spinning this way to counteract that torque force. I don't even have that. All I have is 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever it is. This one has 4 main rotors, and somehow I need to redo everything I can do in a plane or a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how it's going to work. Okay. First of all, thrust upwards is really easy. You spin up all of these props, and what will happen is I'll have a force going straight up. Which is great if I just want to go straight up and straight down and I don't want to correct at all. The problem is I'm going to be hitting turbulence, I'm going to be hitting winds, and this thing's going to be going crazy. So how do I correct it? Well, with the brains, a quadcopter is truly a fly-by-wire design. There is no direct input from my transmitter to my rotors. I can't say just spin that rotor up because I can't think as fast as this would need for me to process. So the brains the flight controller inside of here is actually thinking at all times how to keep it level. And then when I put input on my transmitter, it says, okay, normally I want to keep it level, but right now the pilot wants me to move forward. Now, it knows that to move forward, there is no engine in the back that it can spin up. So if you go over the overhead, Burke, it knows that the way it moves forward is if I tilt the craft forward like this, then the thrust is no longer straight up. It's now got a forward component to it.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what it will do is it will actually increase the thrust on the rear motors to tilt it forward, which will now drag the craft forward. Now, if I'm already running at full speed and it wants to go forward, what we'll have to do is I'll have to actually decrease the thrust on the front motors to do the same thing.
Got it. Right?
Now, that is directional control. So if I want to go forward, I increase the rear two motors and I'll tilt forward. I want to go backwards, increase the thrust on the front two motors, and I'll go backwards. I want to go to the left or to the right. It's the same thing. So that part is easy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. I want to turn. I want to actually yaw the craft. So it's not a roll. It's not a pitch. It's mm-hmm. a yaw. There is no control surface for our yaw here. Again, there's no tail. There's no rudder that I can run air past and have some sort of deflection. So what this is going to do is it's going to take advantage of a really cool trick by using the torque. These, if you stay on the overhead, these two props are going to be running clockwise, like that. These two props are going to be running counterclockwise.
That's the way they are always running,
it's
right?
It's always running.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't that change that direction, otherwise it would totally throw up for a spin
just drop out of the sky. If they were all turning in the same direction, this quad, it would just start spinning faster and faster, and there'd be no way to counteract it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I've got two spinning one direction and two spinning the other direction is that way the torque forces cancel each other out.
Mm-hmm.
This thing will want to stay in pointing it in the same direction because these are spinning as fast as these, and therefore there's no net force.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to turn, what I can do is, let's say I want to turn clockwise, right? And remember, these props are turning clockwise. If I want to turn clockwise, it means I need to spin up the counterclockwise props. So these will spin faster, which means they're going to be generating more net force than the clockwise turning props, which means the entire craft is going to turn clockwise.
Got it.
If I want to go the other way, I do it reverse. If I want to go counterclockwise, I spin up the props that are spinning clockwise, and it forces the entire craft to turn.
Hmm.
So that's kind of cool. I mean, that's actually super, super simple. But a lot of people don't understand that that's how it works. That's why I can't have four props spinning in one direction, because then there'd be no way to counter it. There'd be no way to properly yaw this thing.
Right.
Now, let me show you a little bit of how that actually works. Let me pull out the transmitter for this. We're not going to fly it. And, oh, by the way, folks, don't do this at home if you're going to be demoing, to actually take the props off. We can do this because we're licensed experts.
You are.
No.
I'm not.
Actually, I am a licensed pilot.
Comparatively, you are.
Okay, so the first thing is there's always a safety. So right now, if I throttle up, it will do nothing. It's not until I arm it. Now, once I'm armed, go ahead and go to the overhead, Burke. So what you're going to see is these are going to spin up. And notice how they're spinning in opposite directions, right? So the front, this and this are spinning the same direction. That and that are spinning the same direction. Let me just do it. There we go. Basic spin up. So if I want to start going forward, if I push my stick forward, notice how, see, those rear two props are spinning up a little faster.
What about that one that just stopped?
Well, that's because right now it's completely level, and it's not going up or down, and so my flight controller is basically saying, I don't need that.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see.
And if I want to go sideways, same thing. If I go to the side, you can hear it's actually spinning up props, and that's how it moves, right? It can only control thrust. It's got no directional control except for thrust. So if anyone ever asks you how a quadcopter works, if you don't want to explain everything that we just talked about here, just say thrust. That's all it can do. It can control where the thrust is.
You get better control the more of these that you have in a single unit?
You can.
I mean, you can get three. You can have four. I don't even know. Can you have eight?
You can. So that's called an octocopter, and I built those. Three is the minimum. Well, actually, you could do it with two, but it would fly
it's
horribly.
It's not going to be very stable.
A tricopter actually uses the two props at the front would spin counterclockwise, and then the prop in the rear is actually mounted on a servo, so it can gimbal.
That makes sense.
That's how you get your directional control. But with this, if I lose one motor, it's falling out of the sky. Because suddenly the torque forces are way out of balance. There's no way I'm going to control it.
Right.
If I have a septicopter or an octocopter, as long as I can keep enough motors rotating against each other, it will stay in the air. And, and as long as there's enough thrust to cover the payload that I've attached to it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, a quadcopter is stable, but if you lose a motor, you're falling out of the sky. If you have a one of the septicopters, which has six motors, is that six or sexacopter? Sexacopter, which has six rotors, I can actually lose two as long as...
And the computer in here is going to know that and recalibrate the balance of what it's was remaining?
Right. Well, it doesn't even have to do that. All it knows is, oh, hey, I seem to be falling to the right. I better spin up those
motors.
Better
correct that. Yeah, I got it. Okay.
So that's all it knows. It knows if something's happening to me, the pilot has not commanded, I know how to correct it. If I'm going forward and the pilot doesn't want me to go forward, then, okay, well, let me just drop the rear motors.
Right.
That's how that works. So does that make sense?
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Demystifying the quadcopter is actually quite important. And from the biggest ones to the smallest ones, that's how they all work. You know, that DJI, that's what we would call a 350 class. So it's 350 millimeters from prop nut to prop nut. This one right here, this is actually a 280 class. So it's 280 millimeters from prop nut to prop nut. We've also built 450 classes. We built a 150 class for the truly small one. And then you've got something like this. I think this is something like a 60 class. It's a little teeny tiny one.
It's so cute.
It's so cute. Now, the other thing I would recommend, Jason, is you got to start with a small trainer. Because if you're going to be flying multi-rotors, you will crash. It's not a question. You're going to crash. That's how you learn. So if you get yourself something like this, this is actually smaller than I would recommend. I've always recommended like the SEMA. The SEMA class?
There's my hand.
Yeah, you could cover the entire thing.
That thing's tiny.
Yeah. But something like a SEMA class actually flies like a big one. The problem with these tiny ones is that they don't fly like the larger quadcopters. So you're not really getting a lot of skills other than positional stuff.
You're not going to get any stability, right? Would you?
Well, they're so light that even a little boost of thrust, like...
Or even a little bit of a blow of air.
Could make it go crazy. So, actually, here, when you try it, you've got a little bit of piloting skill. So that's your throttle.
Yep.
All right, let's see.
Okay.
This could be horribly bad, folks.
This could be. Probably will be. Just...
Yeah. Hey, it's not on the ground. Now it is. Now it's not. Okay, you're bunny hopping. That's not bad. Oh, the humanity, folks.
Okay.
The humanity.
But you know what? I wouldn't feel guilty if that
exactly.
totally fell to pieces.
Yeah, this was like a $7 quadcopter. So go ahead and buy a bunch of cheap ones like the SEMAs that we like or even a couple of these just to get the feel before you actually dump money into building one or buying one. I would say the same thing. If you were going to go buy like a $3,000 DJI, the newest model that they have, get a bunch of cheap ones first because crashing a $3,000 quadcopter is not a good way to learn.
No, you don't want to do that if you can avoid it.
We've actually figured that out.
Yes, we've lived through that here at the studio.
That's kind of what we did. Now, when we come back, we're actually going to take you through the parts. So you're going to have to purchase some parts in order to create this project. We're going to run you through that. But first, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, folks, I understand that your home, your house, is your castle, right? I mean, it's where all your stuff is. It's where your loved ones are. It's where your pets are. So what are you doing to protect your home? How are you making sure that people aren't casing the joint? How are you making sure that you stay in contact with the people who want to stay in contact with you by coming next to your house, next to your home? Well, in the old way, you could leave a lookout, or maybe you could just be a little bit paranoid, maybe just miss out all those interactions, or you could get yourself a Ring. Now, Ring has long been a sponsor of the TWiT TV network because we love what they do. And what they do is to make sure that you're home even when you're not home. Now, Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, and the Ring Video Doorbell lets you see and speak to intruders from your smartphone from anywhere in the world. You can even share clips with neighbors using the Ring app. Our Ring's floodlight and spotlight cam lets you build a ring of security around your entire property. Oh, well, the cool thing about this is I bought one of these for my parents in Las Vegas because I was a little concerned. They had a lot of break-ins. They had people who would come by when they thought that the owners were at the club. It was a semi-retirement community. and then they would break in when they didn't get a response. Well, with the Ring video doorbell, when they rang that doorbell, or even when they came onto the porch and set off the motion detector, my parents could talk to those people. It sounded like they were home. It was awesome. It's the best way to make sure that no one's going to mess with your stuff or your loved ones. Now, just like Ring's video doorbell, Floodlight Cam is a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone. With high-visibility floodlights, HD video, and two-way audio, it lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property. You can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. And when things go bump in the night, you'll immediately know what it is. Ring floodlight cams offer the ultimate in-home security. Thieves just can't hide from the Ring. You can monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security kit, which includes a Ring video doorbell and your choice of either 1, 2, or 3 floodlight cams. And connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. We want you to be safe. We want your loved ones to be safe. We want you to stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit at ring.com/knowhow. That's ring.com/knowhow. And we thank Ring for their support of Know How. All right, Jason, so let's get dirty.
Let's do it.
We got to show these folks what they're going to need to buy in order to build this project.
Sorry, I got to get stretched here.
That's more stretching than I've done probably in the last year, but that's cool.
Okay, all right. Good, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Okay, so when we start looking at the parts that you're going to need, there are some things that are universal no matter what class of quadcopter you're going to build. The first is the frame. So if you go ahead and go to the first link there, Burke, this is what's called a Dead Cat or an Alien X or an X-Mode quadcopter. The reason why we're building this is because it's a really good platform. It's a stable platform. It's something that's super easy to use. And, you got it right there. If you go to the overhead shot, Burke, this is it's a 450 class, but it's what's called a stretched 450. Because what we've done is a standard 450 would look something like this, where I've got all of my props on equal distance from each other.
Mm-hmm.
A stretched 450 kind of moves it back a little bit. This is cool because anytime you add a little bit of instability, it actually adds to the agility of the craft. So this is going to make this a really good photography or videography platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a platform that I can hang stuff off of because I'm going to develop off of this in the future. But it also means that I have a little bit of pep to it, which is kind of what I want. I mean, I don't want a craft that's just going to hover. I want a craft that I can actually pilot.
If someone's doing this for the very first time, should they be getting a more symmetrical or the stretched version?
Well, this is the cool thing. You can actually replace this plate and keep the arms. So once you've assembled this, you can actually replace the center section with a standard 450.
Okay.
And you'll reuse everything. And the work that you've done is not going to have to be redone, which is, again, this is why we like to build it, because it lets them customize it exactly the way they want.
Right.
If they want no agility from it whatsoever, if they just want it to be the best camera platform possible, then after they're done with this project, they buy a new $10 kit, which includes the symmetrical 450, and boom, now you've got a more stable platform without actually having to do anything other than unscrew a couple of nuts and install it on the new one.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what we're going for. So we've got a frame, and the frames can be any size. Again, we've got that 350 was a DJI craft. We've done 150s. We've done 280s, 250s. If you want to get bigger, bigger tends to be slower, but it can handle more payload because you've got larger motors with larger props. Smaller tends to be less stable, but they tend to be more fun to play with, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you take a smaller craft, it's more agile. You can zip off in different directions. There's not much mass to it.
Right.
So you get to choose what you want, big and steady or small and agile.
Mm.
Cool? All right. Next thing up, motors. And this is important because a lot of people will buy the cheapest motors that they can find. It is a super, super bad idea. I've reused good motors all the time. Bad motors typically crack the first time I crash.
I was going to ask like how that kind of lower quality surfaces. So it's a matter of durability when you crash.
It's a matter
Is it
of
also
durability.
A matter of like a control, like when you need it to fire up faster, maybe it's less responsive?
Or a little bit. I mean, because the cheap motors, they tend to cheap, well, they're cheap. They cheap out on everything. So you might have bad bearings, which means they're not going to last as long.
Right.
It might mean that the winds, because these are all magnets. They're magnets inside of magnets. Mm-hmm. All the winds, if you go to the side view, Burke, all the winds are, you know, they're not up to tolerance. The side, there you go. So if I'm going to choose motors, I typically don't choose the most expensive ones, but I'm definitely not going to choose the bargain basement ones. These are decent. So these are EMAX 2213. These are 935 kV. Now, let me explain what that means, because you're going to see that. As you start to shop, you're going to see a lot of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the numbers don't always mean what they're supposed to mean, but they're close enough. That first number, the 2213 or like 4416, whatever it might be, that typically refers to the winds. It refers to how much power the thing can take. So the larger the number, the more power the motor can actually use, mm-hmm. right? But what it does with that power is that second set of numbers, and those are reliable. If you go to the side shot again, so these are 935s, and what that means is that for every volt I give this motor, it's going to revolve 935 times a second. A minute.
Right.
So this is going to be, you know, 10 volts. Suddenly you're going 9,000 times a minute. Now, that number is important because, remember, the motor is going to be taking in power, and what it does is expressed by that 935. If this was like a 400 kV motor, it means it would be taking in the same amount of power, but it's going to be rotating much more slowly, less than half as fast. But what that means is every rotation has more torque.
Because
it's still using the same amount of power, which means if it's spinning slower, I can put a bigger prop on it. And this is the fun part of the design. Do I want a big prop with slow motors that won't be as loud but will carry more? Or do I want a fast motor with smaller props that will be more agile but will not carry as much?
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is a design choice. I like the 935s because it's a nice even midway point, and these are inexpensive. These are going to run you about $10 a pop. And I mean, I haven't lost one yet, and I've crashed these things a lot.
On the top end, like how high can you go from a cost perspective? And like, if you wanted to pimp your drone,
yeah. So
where can you take it?
The octocopters that I built for the Pope's last World Youth Day, they were designed to go up on a tether, and they stayed up the entire time. So it was basically their aerial camera. It would go up 300 feet, and then they had a camera on a gimbal that they could rotate. And those were those motors cost $300 each.
Wow.
But I mean, you get what you pay for.
Right.
I mean, each one, it was an octocopter, and I could lose four of the motors and still stay in the air. So I overbuilt it, ridiculously overbuilt
it. Because you don't want to mess that up, right? Well, you don't want to lose that in the middle of...
Well, also because you're flying it over a crowd. And yes. If that thing falls out of the sky, you're killing somebody. So, it's what we did. Stay economical. 935s are a really good spot. Some other ones that I like, you can find a lot of these on eBay. These are the same one. These are EMAX, but these are 2216s. They're a little bit different. They're less robust, but the nice thing about this is you can buy them in packs of four for a little bit less.
Okay.
So again, you know, choose your motor, choose your budget.
And in this case, you got a kit as opposed to buying just the motors themselves.
Just the motors themselves, right? So you've got the props and the motors. By the way, all of the motors that I buy are what are called rotation threaded, because in the old design, like the old DJI, before we had to replace the motors because somebody put screws that were too long and destroyed the motors.
Oh, don't do that.
I won't say who it is, but it was someone on our engineering crew. But when you rotation thread, when you're not rotation threaded, it means that on at least two of the motors, because of the spin of the motor, the torque itself is trying to unscrew the prop nut, which is bad because then the props fall off when you're flying. And
don't want that.
The craft don't fly really well if they don't have props. Yeah.
Makes sense.
But these are rotation threaded. So what will happen is these two have a counterclockwise thread, and those two have a clockwise thread, which means the torque of the motor actually tightens the bolt, which is what you want.
It makes a lot of sense.
It makes a huge amount of sense. It is so much a better way. And all of my motors now, I buy all of them threaded. So these small IMAX are threaded. These are all threaded. And you can actually see them. See, this is a – actually, if you go to the side view, Burke. This is a the side view. There we go. That's a plus thread. And then this one is a counterclockwise thread.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want. We want an equal number of each threading so that when we build our quadcopter, we don't have nuts spinning off.
Unless that's what you're going for,
unless you're like you're into that, then
I like the self-destructive drone idea, just as a genre of drone making.
I have to say it is pretty spectacular. When Brian and I were still flying our 250 classes, he didn't tighten one nut entirely, and it didn't just fall out of the sky. It did this like cartwheeling tumble of death. And the whole time, he's trying to save it, so he's messing with the throttle, so the thing is like, and then powered into the ground. Don't do that. That's bad. All right, the other thing you're going to need is something to actually control the motors, because these are three-phase motors, but they won't do anything unless I have a controller. That's why I have these. If you go to the side view, Berg, these are electronic speed controllers. Now, these are 30 amps. These are from Ready to Fly. I put the links for Ready to Fly. I will say this. I like the guy. I like the fact that he's a hobbyist who tried to make a living out of this. Sometimes people have complained that he takes a long time to deliver, and I understand that. I still want to support him. But here's the thing. You can buy these components from so many different places now. It's not as if there's an absence of parts. 30 amp is way overrated. I could get away with a 20 amp. In fact, I have a couple of 20 ampers right here. So these are much, much smaller, much, much lighter. But what I like about the 30 amp is there's so much headroom. And really, I'm creating a sort of an experimental platform here. And the 30 amp, and they're the same price. And the 30 amps may be heavier, but they're much more robust. Again, I have never burned out one of my 30 amp speed controllers. I've burned out plenty of 10s and 20s, but the 30 amps are pretty solid. Unless I impact directly on them, they're basically going to be okay.
So this is buying at this level is saying I've got room to grow, essentially.
Precisely.
If I want to expand out, if you limit yourself there, then you're kind of capped at
you're
that
capped,
point.
Right.
You're
going
to buy again.
I want a bigger motor. Okay, it means I have to buy a new speed controller as well.
Right.
Now, the cool thing about this is when I am done, I'm going to have all of these with bullet connectors, which means I can swap these things in and out like Legos. It's more of a hassle for me to have to do that, because bullet connectors are not fun to put on. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that I can interchange my devices later on. I really like that.
Now, why are they not fun to put on? They look really fun.
No. to solder, you're going to see. When we get to the video, you're going to see how much of a pain in the butt it is to actually put these on properly.
Right.
So I've got my speed controllers. My speed controllers will allow the flight controller to speed up or slow down the motors.
Yeah.
That's all they do, electronic speed controllers. Now, if you want to save a little bit of cash, if you go to the next link here, you can actually buy a combo kit. And I used to hate these, but they've actually gotten pretty good. The LHI kit, it's four motors and four 30-amp ESCs with Simon K. Now, that's important. You want ESCs with decent firmware, decent microcode. So Simon K is good. Blue Heli is good. A lot of the third-party firmware, they don't respond fast enough. And so you'll get input lag, which is not
right. Yeah, you don't want that.
But I mean, if you buy one of those kits, you go from $45 for your motors and $40 from your ESCs to like $60 for the whole thing. If you're on a budget, these aren't bad. I mean, they're really, really close. I would bet that these are probably manufactured on the same assembly line in Taiwan or in China somewhere. So it's all good.
You just get the price cut because you're buying it as a package as opposed to individually.
Precisely. Now, you're also going to need power distribution. And your power distribution board is something like this. This allows you to easily, if you go to the overhead there, to easily distribute power to all the different components, the different devices on your quad that are going to need it. And again, I got this from Ready to Fly Quads because they're inexpensive. They're about $2. You could make your own power distribution harness by twisting together a bunch of wires. But where's your belt to load of pride? I mean, come on. Make it a little prettier than that. It's $2. It's a lot easier. And again, as you'll see in the video when we assemble this thing, doing it this way means that there's a lot of room to expand. I can actually make an octocopter with this. There's enough inputs and outputs here that I can actually have multi-batteries and multiple ESCs. So, yeah, go ahead and get yourself that.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, props. Props are important. And what I would suggest, if you just go to the link for this one, Burke, eight-inch props for this are about right. You could go with 10-inch if you want a little bit more lift. But these 8-inch composite props are pretty good. You can get a set of them for about, you know, $8-some. And again, I've listed ready-to-fly quads here, but you can get these from Banggood. You can get them a bit more expensive on Amazon, or you could get Grab Bag on eBay. Props are props, and we're going to show you how to balance them. Mm-hmm. And what I found is if you pay a tiny bit more, it means you spend a little less time getting them ready to fly.
Oh, okay.
Because you don't just slap them on. I mean, you can, right. But then you shake everything apart.
Now, when you're firmly entrenched in this world of building your own quadcopters and all that, are you buying a stockpile of of these things to have on hand for when you need them? And when you do that, I imagine economies of scale, right? Like you buy 20 of these things at one time, you're going to get less per item.
When I'm buying a frame kit, I don't buy one frame kit. I buy three frame kits because I know I'm probably going to at least break one, and it's nice to have an extra spare.
Yeah.
When I buy four motors, I'm actually buying six motors because you can break motors.
Right.
Some of the other components, like the power distribution board, you're probably not going to break any of them because they're inside the craft, but they're cheap, and you might as well have a stockpile. So I've got an entire wall that is dedicated to just multi-rotor parts. And because I bought a bulk of them, it means I haven't actually paid. Even though I've been a hobbyist for going on 4 years now, I haven't paid for anything new since that initial outlay. And I've saved a lot of money that way rather than buying a little bit at a time.
Yeah. And then you feel like you're constantly spending.
Precisely.
This hobby.
Precisely.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I mean, look, an ESC is an ESC. You're going to use it at some point. I mean, I use them all the time for projects that are not multi-rotor projects, because electronics are electronics and frame parts are frame parts, and they're all good.
All right.
So I've got that. Now I'm going to need the brains. And this is where we get either expensive or inexpensive. You can get yourself something like this, which is a MWC if you go to the overhead. Or actually go to the side view, that's better. This is an MWC flip. This is like a $40 controller. This will do altitude hold. It doesn't do GPS, but it can. I can upgrade the firmware. You can go for a KK, something more like this that has the screen built into it. And then we've got sort of the higher end ones. You've got like the NASA controller. This is actually a V1 NASA controller. This is the one that originally came out of the DJI. I think this one has actually burned out. But you can get super expensive. You can go all the way down from $20 for a flight controller all the way up to hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for some of the super premium high-end ones. And those are the ones that do automatic GPS.
Right.
They can return your quad to you. What I suggest is start cheap. Get the dirt cheap KK one like this. A KK board is $20. It's nearly indestructible. Mm-hmm. And it will teach you how to fly because there's no electronic assistance. The only thing a KK will do is level your craft.
What is the display going to show you on this board?
Well, it allows me to. So if there's a display on the board, I can actually use these buttons to change settings.
Okay.
If I've got one of these, if I change settings, it means I have to connect it with my laptop.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a field
the difference
thing.
There.
It's a field thing.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're going to need some support gear. You're going to need a bunch of heat shrink. You're going to need some cable, like silicone. Actually, go to the silicone wire. This is important, folks. Don't buy yourself plastic wire, plastic insulated wire. You want like 14-gauge stranded silicone wire. It's going to cost you less than $5 for a meter of the stuff, and that's more than enough for the project. The reason why you want silicone is flexible. It stays flexible. It's heat resistant, so it's not going to melt when you start soldering it.
Right.
And it also means that over time, it's not going to start cracking. What you'll see with a lot of the plastic stranded stuff is 4 years out and it starts getting brittle. And if it cracks, you're passing between 50 and 100 amps to that thing. It's going to arc, it's going to catch fire, and that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, again, it's what you want.
Unless that's what you're going for. But 4 years is a long time to wait for that. So
right.
Maybe a different tactic.
Also, get yourself some heat shrink tubing. We've got a link for this. Just get yourself an assortment box. Heat shrink tubing is always useful. It's always something that you're going to want in your maker kit. And you can get this for less than $2. You get yourself all the heat shrink you're ever going to need for this project and many others. Get yourself a set of 20 3.5-millimeter bullet connectors. If you go to the link for this one, again, these are not that expensive, and you don't technically need them. Everything we're going to show you, you could directly solder, but if you add the bullet connectors, it makes it sort of a Lego kit, so I can swap things out without having to cut and resolder.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Which we like.
Yeah.
And you're also going to need some spacers. I always have a spacer kit. If you go to the link for that, M3 nylon spacers, I pay a tiny bit more for the black ones just because they look better. That's sort of a vanity thing. But again, a box of these will cost you less than $7, and you will use these all the time. Non-conductive spacers are a very, very good thing to have. You're also going to need a pack of M3 screws. I got the cheapest one on Amazon, if you go to the link for that one, Burke. It's, you know, it's just a couple of bucks. You're talking about $7 for 100. That's more than you're ever going to need. Later on in my quadcopter career, I got nicer-looking hex nuts just because...
just because, hey, you got to upgrade, yes, right? Yes. Eventually, you're like, how can I make this better?
It was that OCD thing. I had it in my lab. And I was just staring at it as I was working. I'm like, those screws are really ugly. I'm like, I know it makes no difference whatsoever.
I can do something about this. Yes.
But why should it be ugly? Yes. Come on, let's make it pretty.
Exactly.
And then you're going to need a battery charger, a battery, and a transmitter. Now, this is where you can sort of skimp or splurge if you want to. This is the least expensive battery charger that I could find. Again, this is on Hobby King, which is where I buy all my batteries from because I trust them. You have to get good batteries. This is going to cost you about $7. It will slow charge. I use a nicer one, a Sky RC charger that can fast charge, but that is like a $60 setup. So this is cheaper.
And so what is slow? Like how slow?
So you could fully charge a 2200 milliamp hour battery probably in like 5 hours.
Okay.
6 hours versus 10 minutes.
Okay. Wow, that's a big difference.
It's a big difference, but I mean, a lot of people, what I would actually suggest is, look, get yourself a pack of 5 batteries.
Yeah, that's what was going to be my next question. How much time you get out of a single 2200 milliamp hour battery, and how many of those you need to make sure that you're not, you know, done 10 minutes into your session.
Precisely. And actually, that's a good point. Go to the next link for the battery. The one I like is this, and this is pretty much a standard, a 2200 milliamp 3S, that means 3-cell, 25C LiPo pack. That's a lithium polymer pack. That's my battery of choice. Now, this used to be a 2200 25C battery. If you go to the, you may notice it's kind of bulged.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, most of my batteries are like that now. I may have driven them a little bit too hard.
Oh, wow.
They're ready for disposal. Yeah, I'm going to have to chop it. But I do want to explain one thing about batteries really quickly. People know 3S because there's 1-cell, 2-cell, 3-cell, 4-cell, 5-cell. 3S is the most common for quadcopters. But this number, the C, 25C, people are always wondering what that is. That's actually what's called the discharge rating. That's how fast the battery can release the power that's stored within it safely. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what this is it tells me I am a 22.2 amp hour battery. My formula is watts equals volts times amps. That's West Virginia. So what I can do is I can actually multiply 25C by that, and it will tell me how many watts I can push out at the same time. So this is an 11.1 volt battery. And that will tell me whether or not this can actually supply the power I need for my craft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're actually going to go more in depth on that. I don't want to confuse you too much because we're just building right now.
Yeah. Okay.
The last thing is radio. Now, you could buy yourself, on that same website, you can buy yourself a $20 radio. It is a $20 radio. It will work.
I imagine this is an area. I mean, there's a lot of points throughout here where it seems like small amounts. It all adds up.
Yeah.
But this seems to be an area where you pay a lot up front.
Yeah.
Like potentially, if you really want to get something that controls well.
Precisely.
Pay up front.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, you're going to replace a $20 radio eventually.
Yeah,
you're
going
to go, dude, this is a piece of crap, and it is a piece of crap. So get a less crappy piece of crap. That Turnigy that Burke just showed you, this is decent. It's a 9-channel for $50. So you can get a 5-channel for $20 or a 9-channel for $50. And the 9-channel is a much better radio. It will teach you way, way more. Now, eventually, you might go from something like this, which is more like that Turnigy, that 9-channel. This was $50 when we bought it, to this. This is a Free Sky. This is more of a $200 radio.
Oh, wow.
But it does way the heck more. So much more. But it is, I would not recommend this for a beginner. It's actually difficult to figure this one out. This is super simple. So go with the $50 one and then maybe upgrade to the $200 one. Although I still fly with this.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I have this on all my high-end quadcopters, this is the one I choose when I'm just bombing around.
And the higher-end one that you're showing off there, I mean, as far as the straight manual controls of the copter, they're the same between the two.
Exactly.
It's just this gives you more controls over advanced features like activating modes on,
correct,
the,
Correct.
Quadcopter.
Precisely. Like for this one can do telemetry, so it can tell me how much time, flight time I have left, what my battery looks
gotcha.
Like.
Okay.
You know, I can activate logging. I've got a lot more channels I can play with on this, which matters to me when I'm flying the high-end one. But when I'm flying a low-end one, there is no functional difference between right. flying on either of these.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Does that make sense? I mean, this is...
Yeah.
It's not a lot. What you're looking at is if you were to go with the budget route, you could get one of these for about $150.
Okay.
Like
with all the components budget. And everything.
All the components. Everything right. that you need to get this thing in the air for about $150.
It's not bad.
If you buy the moderate priced one, that includes the better radio and maybe a better battery and a better charger, it's going to be about $220 to $240.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. I mean, yes, you can buy something cheaper from the store, but again, that thing breaks and you're done.
You're done.
This you're going to build yourself, and I really kind of like that. And I hope you like it too.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, the ability, just going through this process is an education how to put it together, which comes in handy if and when, probably when, you end up breaking a component and you need to swap it out.
Precisely.
You don't need to pester somebody else. You can do it yourself. And there's great benefit to that. It's the whole concept of, you know, lead someone to water and teach them how to fish instead of giving them a fish.
Precisely. And you know what? For the parents out there, this is a great project for you to teach your young man, your young woman, about some basics in electronics. I mean, this it sounds like a complicated project, but it's not. In fact, we're going to show you exactly how uncomplicated it is by showing you how it all comes together.
An AlienX quadcopter is a good, strong platform on which you can build up your multi-rotor knowledge. Since the last time we built a 450-class quadcopter, the prices of the components have come down a bit, and there are now more options for parts. But we're going to show you the basic way to put all the pieces together in our 2018 AlienX build. The first step in integration is to mount the motors on the AlienX's arms. Your frame kit should have included four arms in two different colors. Decide which arms will be forward and which ones will be aft. Put a little time into this decision because you'll need to be able to easily see which way is forward and which is aft once the AlienX is airborne. Now, mark your arms from 1 to 4, with 1 being the forward left arm, 2 being the forward right, 3 aft right, and 4 aft left. This is especially important if you're using motors that are threaded for clockwise and counterclockwise operation, as swapping arms would mean having a motor that will torque off its propeller. This is also just good practice if you ever need to disassemble and reassemble your AlienX. For this build, I've chosen a set of EMAX 2213 motors that are rotation threaded. The two red cap motors are threaded to turn counterclockwise, while the two black cap motors turn clockwise. If you have a similar set of rotation threaded motors but are unsure of which way they are designed to operate, just remember that holding the prop nut while turning the motor in the direction it is supposed to turn will tighten the nut. If it loosens the nut, you've got the wrong one. Take arm number 1 and one of the motors that turns clockwise, again in our build it's one of the black capped motors, then mount the motor to the arm using 4 M3 8mm machine screws. The length is important, because 6mm screws won't penetrate far enough into the motor housing to truly lock it to the arm, and 10mm screws will penetrate too far, possibly touching the windings and damaging or destroying the motor. Apply a very thin dab of Loctite Blue on each screw to prevent them from vibrating loose. Repeat the process for all four arms. Arm number 3 gets the other black cap clockwise turning motor, while arms 2 and 4 get the two red cap counterclockwise turning motors. With the motors mounted, let's move focus to the electronic speed controllers. If you're using the same EMAX 2213 motors we're using, then you already have pre-soldered male 3.5mm bullet connectors on the motor leads. Our original AlienX build used ready-to-fly quad Red Series 30-amp ESCs, but there are now many decent ESCs on the market. Just try to get something with updated microcode. No matter what ESC you choose, there's a good chance that you'll need female 3.5mm bullets on the motor leads and male 3.5mm bullets on the power leads. I actually prefer to not have pre-soldered connectors on the ESCs because it allows us to cut the motor leads down to keep excess wire to a minimum. Thread your motor leads to the lattice of the arms with their connectors ending up on the upper surface. Then place the ESC towards the rear of each arm and eyeball how much wire you can remove. Account for the length of the bullet connectors and be generous with slack. You can tie down a little excess wire, but if it's too short, you'll have to solder new wires. Measure twice and cut once, then repeat the process for all four ESCs. It's time to solder the connectors, and you're going to need some helping hands for this. Strip about 4 millimeters of insulation from the ends of the ESC motor leads, gin your ends, then solder 3.5 millimeter female bullet connectors to each lead. The easiest way to attach the bullet connectors is by heating the bullets, again held by the helping hands, until you can flow solder inside the mounting cup. Fill the cup halfway with solder, then insert your pre-tin lead. Allow the solder on the leads to reflow, then remove heat and hold the wire in position until the solder cools. With the motor leads done, you can now solder male 3.5 millimeter bullet connectors onto the power leads of the ESCs using the same process that we use for the female connectors on the ESC motor leads. Double-check your work. Look for empty mounting cups or obvious gaps between wires and solder. The heat shrink will hide bad joints, so it's best to take a second and third look now before you insulate. If you insulate bad solder joints, you'll have to cut off all the insulation on the motors and the ESC combo at best. At worst, it will fail catastrophically while you're in the air. Once you're satisfied with your soldering work, use lengths of 3/16-inch heat shrink tubing to insulate the connectors. For the female connector, you want to cover everything from the end of the connector to about a quarter inch past. For the male connector, insulate everything from the rotating part of the bullet to about quarter inch past. Connect the motor leads to the leads on the ESCs and zip tie them to the far end of the arm away from the motors. The ESC should be securely mounted to the arm, and I like using a second, smaller zip tie to secure the motor leads. But don't yet overly tighten the motor leads, and don't zip tie the wires from the motors yet. You may need to swap several of the connectors when we check motor rotation in the next episode. So set the arms aside, and let's make a power harness. Our power harness starts with a 45mm power distribution board. If you've chosen ESCs that don't provide 5-volt power back to the flight controller, you'll probably want a power distribution board that will. But basically, any power source you connect to the positive and negative leads on the inside of any board will be distributed to any of the devices that are connected to the positive and negative leads on the outside of the board. Cut 8 2-inch lengths of 14-gauge silicone wire, 4 black and 4 red. These will become the leads that go from the distribution board to the power leads on the ESCs. Also cut a pair of 5-inch lengths. These will become the wires that connect the power distribution board to the battery. Strip 4 millimeters of insulation off each end of the 2-inch wires and tin each end. Now solder a female 3.5 millimeter bullet connector to one end of each wire of the 2-inch wires. Insulate each connector with heat shrink tubing as before. The 5-inch pair of wires will be connected to a female XT60 connector, a popular connector found on many LiPo battery packs. Soldering XT60 connectors can be a little tricky because too much heat will melt the plastic housing surrounding the XT60, warping the alignment of the conductors, or destroying the connector altogether. I found that the easiest way to solder the XT60 is to first plug the connector into its opposite to spread the heat and maintain alignment of the conductors, even as the plastic softens. Then you need to be quick with your soldering. Insert your pre-stripped and tin lead into the correct cup. Note that the negative end will always be on the side of the connector with cut corners. Then apply heat to the wire, not the connector. When the solder on the pre-tin wire starts to flow, quickly apply solder to the wire and fill the cup. Then let it cool. Never spend more than 8 seconds applying heat, and make sure to let the XT60 cool before soldering the other wire. Once your wires are attached, use 3/16-inch heat shrink tubing to insulate the conductors. Now, let's assemble the power distribution board. Making sure to match the positive solder points on the red wires and the negative points on the black wires, solder each 2-inch lead to the board, making sure to use the front two and rear two contact sets for the ESC leads. Take the 5-inch leads and solder them into the contact points on the inside of the board. You can use either side on most boards, but you'll want all your wires mounted on the same side. It doesn't have to be pretty, but try to avoid an excess of solder, which risks a bridge connection. That's a really bad thing when you're passing 50 to 100 amps through the board. With our leads in place and the boards checked for solder bridges, it's time to mount the power distribution board on the lower half of the frame. If you're wondering which plate is the lower half is wider and longer than the top half. Using nylon spacers and the pre-drilled mounting holes, secure the board so that the solder points point up and the power leads point to the front and rear of the frame. If you have the spacers, you can also screw spacers on top of the board with a total height of 1.5 inches. This will allow you to secure the board to the top frame once the arms are installed, making your frame more rigid. Remembering the numbering of your arms, attach them to the bottom plate with 2 screws each. Pass the power leads to the arms and connect them to the leads from the power harness. Make sure not to flex the frame or put any undue pressure on it, since it's relatively fragile until the top half of the frame is attached. Attach the top half of the frame to the arms using the included screws. Once those are fastened, use the 4 aluminum posts to complete the tail working towards the rear of the frame. Zip tie your receiver to the tail and use the excess zip tie length to secure the receiver's antenna. Using more nylon spacers, mount the flight controller on the top deck directly above the power distribution board. This is the center of gravity for your craft. I'm mounting the flight controller on the top deck because I'm using a KK2.1.5 board, and I want easy access to the screen and controls while tuning. But you can also mount your flight controller within the frame, just above the power distribution board. Using the 4 rubber dampeners, install the clean plate on the nose of the Alien X. The clean plate will allow you to mount GoPro-style cameras on a surface that is somewhat isolated from the rest of the frame, reducing vibration while placing the camera in the nose of the craft. Now it's time to wire your flight controller. This is a basic platform Alien X, so we're using a KK flight controller. It doesn't do GPS or return to home or even altitude hold. Basically, all it will do is keep your craft level. But it's easy to wire and inexpensive, so it's perfect for this build. If you're using something else, you'll need to modify these instructions to fit your controller. The ESCs will be connected to the row of pins to the right of the KK, with the topmost set of pins for ESC 1, the second set for ESC 2, and so forth. The numbering of the ESC is the same as the arm number I had you mark earlier. When connecting the ESC to the controller, make sure the ground wire, usually black, is to the outside of the board. The positive wire is to the middle, and the signal cable, usually yellow or white, is to the inside. Most non-opto-type ESCs include a battery eliminator circuit, or BEC, that provides 5 or 6 volt power to the flight controller and the receiver from the main battery, but they can fry electronics if incorrectly connected. Check and double-check your connections before you apply power. Also, while the KK and many other flight controllers like it will only accept power from the first ESC, some flight controllers will fry if you connect them to more than one BEC-equipped ESC. If you're using such a flight controller, snip the red center wire on the ESCs other than the first. Your receiver should have a schematic for which pins are signal and which are power. Plug one of your servo leads into the receiver pins for channel 1, making sure to use the white or yellow wire for signal. Plug the other side of the lead into the topmost set of pins on the left side of the controller with the white or yellow signal cable towards the inside of the KK. Take a second lead and connect it to just the signal pins of channels 2 through 4 on the receiver. Connect the other end of that lead to just the signal pins, the ones closest to the screen for channels 2 to 4 on the flight controller. Then use the last lead to connect channel 5 from the receiver to the controller. Our KK came with a small alarm that gives us audible information about arming status, voltage, and, if we crash in the weeds, an audible location signal. On the top left side of the KK are 2 pins labeled buzzer. Connect the red lead to the positive pin and the black lead to the negative. Now, for the moment of truth. We're going to connect power to the Alien X for the first time. Recheck your connections to make sure you haven't cross-connected anything, and make sure your props are not yet on the motors. Then, standing ready to remove power at the first hint of trouble or blue smoke, connect your XT60 power connector to a lithium poly battery. If all is well, then you should hear the flight controller beep and see the LED screen light up. If so, congrats! There's still a lot to do. We need to calibrate the receiver, check the rotation of our motors, and tune the craft, but we'll save that for the next episode of our 2018 Alien X build.
Okay, enough with the energy pumping. I mean, again, this is the basic platform. I've added a couple of things to this, and that's what we're going to be doing over the next couple of episodes. I was absolutely serious about this being a platform. In fact, I've already got a design for a magnetic hook
that we're going to be doing a challenge with. We're both going to have these, and we're going to be doing the quadcopter equivalent of the crane game, where you have to pick something up from a container and drop it into another place.
All right.
Just get yourself ready for that. Now, Burke was insisting that I point out again the fact that some flight controllers, not the KAK, but some flight controllers, really don't like it if they have more than one input voltage. And in that case, it's important to use either an opto-type ESC, which does not return any power to the flight controller, or to clip that red wire. Just get rid of that voltage so that you're not getting more than one ESC trying to power the flight controller. But otherwise, it's really simple. And here's what I love about this hobby. Building the smallest one or the largest one, it's the same parts, just scaled up or down. It's the same procedure, and it's the same way to fly, which I kind of like. I mean, it's cool because I can look around my lab, and depending on what mood I'm in, that's the type of quad that I'm going to fly. Do I want to go racing? Right. I take a small one. Do I want to do some aerial photography? I've got the octocopter. And they all can be fixed the same way. It's the basic knowledge that allows me to sort of expand them or contract them as necessary.
Yeah, it's super empowering to know that you have the ability to hop in there and make those changes, maybe even borrow pieces from one to satisfy another one, play around, mix and match, Frankenstein.
Now, Jason, I do have a surprise for you.
What?
And that is the fact that the kit that we just showed, all the parts, that's actually yours. So I'm
going
to do some of the more difficult assembly bits and pieces, but you're going to put your zone together because we have to do a dueling quadcopter thing going on.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. How are you with a soldering iron?
We should go over that.
You're going to get a lot better.
I've used a soldering iron a few times.
Folks, here at Know How, we have no liability insurance, so this could be a very interesting few weeks. That does it for this episode of Know How. We don't want you to freak out. If you want to do this project, we're going to make it really easy for you. You can always find our show notes at twit.tv/KH. Now there, you're going to find all the links for all the components that we've purchased, and you're also going to find the step-by-step procedure. This is something that is detailed enough where you can actually just follow the steps as numbered on the show notes, and you'll be able to put together the quadcopter just like I did in that video.
Yeah, I mean, you've got them detailed at length in the show notes. I'm looking at it right now. Really thorough.
We don't want to leave you hanging.
Yeah, you don't want to hit a step and be like, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do.
Oops. Now, the next time we're going to be doing a quadcopter episode is in 2 weeks, because next week we've got Patrick. Patrick's going to be coming in. We're going to be doing some feedback, as I promised to do in 2018. Also, I'm going to be having some a little fun from CES. I'm going to be heading down there in a day or so to see what's going on in the deserts of Las Vegas. But when we come back, we're going to finish off this Alien X, and I'm going to introduce you to the challenge, which I think you're going to like.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
That's a tease, folk. That's a professional. That's so pro. It's so pro. Yeah. Also, don't forget that you can find us on the social, specifically on our Google Plus page. You just go to Google Plus, look for Know How, ask to be added to the group. It's a very short approval process. It's just the way that I keep out all the spam accounts. But once you get in, you've got access to over 11,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls. These are DIYers and makers along every step of the journey. They've got great projects. They've got questions that you might be able to answer. Give knowledge, get knowledge. It's what we're all about. And actually, you've got a Google Plus group going for your All About Android now.
Well, yeah, we've had one for a long time for All About Android. It just kind of fell to the wayside with a lack of moderation there for a little while. But I've been back in there moderating it and getting it back on track as well.
Good stuff.
It's good for that.
Now, that's not the only place on the socials that you can find us. If you want to follow us outside the studio, I think the best place would be that tweet thing. Have you done that? The bird?
The Twitter thing? Is that what you're talking about? Or Twit?
Tweeter?
Tweeter, yeah. That's what it is.
It's what all the kids are doing these days.
I don't know if all the kids are doing it anymore. There's lots of other things that all the kids are doing. But you can find me there. I'm at Jason Howell.
That's right. And you can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. And you can find the third member of our crew, who today is Burke. And Burke,
is that his real name?
Can you turn on the mic without destroying the TriCaster? I'm not sure if that's... Can you say hi, Burke?
Hi.
Okay, that's about
him.
All.
That's him.
That's Burke.
That was so
Burke.
Burke.
What's your Twitter address?
An elf 3.
Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And now that you know how,
why not put it together and hopefully not crash it?